Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, May 6th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello, Michael. Glad to be here.
Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, as always, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are, 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now, for tonight's topic, we're going to be taking a look back at the 10-year history of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. And joining us is Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hi, everybody. Good to be here. And interesting topic. And I wanted to start out by saying, you know, it's not... You know, the beginning wasn't just 10 years ago. It was more like, you know, 60 years ago. And so I wanted to go back a little bit, and because we just had the 10-year anniversary of ICMH and the schools and all that. And so I wanted to go back, and I know we talked a little about history and stuff a few weeks ago, but I want to go back a little bit further and just discuss and talk about how this all started. You know, what was the drivers? What were the drivers? What was the impetus? What was the motivation and inspiration and all that? I thought it would be interesting. And if it's not, it's going to be interesting for me to talk about it to me, right? I'll be interested in it.
Oh, I'll be interested.
Kind of a joke.
So we're going to take a little walk down memory lane and then see where we're at the moment.
That's right.
All the energy and what it takes to do those really monumental things that you've done.
Well, they are. It's been a lot of work done.
It has, yeah.
Into it, you know, lots and lots of work and evolution and all that. But
well, I know you might have something in mind to talk about, Dr. Kelly. But if I can ask you a couple of questions, that would be great.
Go ahead.
You know, let's say the 5 years prior to starting the church and the school. What was that pivotal time that inspired you? Like, was there some events that occurred or something in particular that occurred that said, I'm going to do this?
Yes, but before we can get to that, we have to go back a little further to understand the progression of where all – and we'll go back
– All right.
I mean, go back a few more years, maybe a decade or two. And it just – and basically – what the way that this evolved was this way. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom was an alcoholic and my dad was codependent as heck, and so was I. I mean, I was king of codependent people. I grew up, I didn't even have any clue about it. I didn't know what it was, but I was really codependent bad. And and filled with them esteem, you know, and still confident. I mean, had confidence, but I still had them esteem. Anyway, so, you know, grew up in that environment, some horrendous times there, and then I married, you know, a person who would become an alcoholic because I'm codependent. You know, like attracts like, right? It's the energy signature thing that if you've been through our program, you know what I'm talking about. And so that relationship ended after 18 years and just, you know, tons of problems and horrendous and all that. And that was back in 99 that it ended. And so at that time, toward the end of that relationship, back in 99 or so, I left the church. I was witnesses, you know, I was basically excommunicated from it because I had gotten remarried to Tracy. And so we were both kicked out, which is fine. Best thing that ever happened to me. If I had to go back and do it over again, I'd just leave, you know, disassociate myself, which is another form of leaving it. But nevertheless, and at that time in 99, I began working on my first book, The Game Rules for Life, which I published in June of 2000 and, you know, self-published is all. And so that was the start. Then I began speaking, and this is pivotal because I began speaking and teaching for national seminars and Fred Pryor. Maybe some of you have been to their seminars. And so I was traveling around the country. I did that for 5 years. Traveled and every week, you know, doing day-long, sometimes two-day seminars on leadership, on communication skills, on just a variety of topics. And I enjoyed that. And so I started doing that in about 2001. And I did that up till about 2006 or 7, I guess. Maybe it was 2002 to 2007. Anyway, so that gave me an opportunity to really develop some concepts. And so during that time, back in 2001, I also created and developed Empowered Recovery, which is a help program for those who are in alcoholic relationships, not the non-alcoholic, not the alcoholic, but the alcoholic, or the non-alcoholics in an alcoholic relationship. And I wrote the book on that in 2006. I finished it, but I started Empowered Recovery in 2001 and began writing that and creating it, developing it. And that's where the Life Leadership Paragon got its start, in the recovery paragon. And I adapted that recovery, the Life Leadership Paragon, for non-alcoholic relationships or alcoholic or addiction-based relationships back then. So that's where that started. And I had a forum, still do, empoweredrecovery.com is one of our educational programs. And, you know, there's been a ton of people gone through that, read the book and, you know, the Alcoholic Relationship Survival Guide. And it is the book on surviving an alcoholic or addiction-based relationship. It is the book. I mean, it is the book in the world for that, even though, you know, hasn't exactly been a bestseller, but, you know, hundreds of copies have been sold over these 20 years, right? Or nearly. And so that's where a lot of things get started. But then I began teaching and, you know, traveling and teaching leadership seminars, management seminars, communication seminars. And that's where I began developing a lot of my own concepts. That's where I took the recovery paragon and adapted it for business, for regular life, you know, for all that. And that's where the Life Leadership Paragon evolved from. During that time, I also created the two profiles that we use in our program, the assertiveness profile and the behavioral profile. Now, there are other profiles out there. There's not very many, if any, assertiveness profiles out there. That was one of my creations. But the behavioral profile, you know, there's the Myers-Briggs, there's the DISC profile, there's several others. But I wanted one that I could use for my students, for my people, you know, for people I taught, where I could hand it out and not have to worry about royalties and all that. And I created my own. And that's the one we use at IMHS and TFU and some of the courses there. So I developed that, and that took years. I mean, I polished that thing. I mean, I polished it. I kept developing it, tweaking it, and making it better and better. And so I developed all these concepts. Okay, so we fast forward now to about 2006. At the end of 2005, I think it was. Anyway, I decided I wanted to pursue something I had always been interested in, and that is paranormal research. Even, you know, from a little child. I was very interested in that. I was always interested in UFOs and, you know, cryptozoology and all that stuff. And so I started the Spirit Team, which is an acronym at the time, and got some team members, and we began doing investigations. That's where I met several of my friends, you know, Grant and Gregory and a bunch of people that worked with the psychics and whatnot, and had some very interesting experiences. And I was able to speak at the old courthouse, which is now a museum in Bartow, Florida, and had like 160 people there, and I met people who became team members. So we're advancing now. In 2007, I wrote the CPI course, Certified Paranormal Investigation course, and then in 2008, I met Yari Mikula from the Denver area, and he and I got to, you know, we hit it off, and so we both co-founded Paranexus at that point. And we started doing a radio program. I mean, I've been doing a weekly radio program even before Paranexus. Grant and I, Reuben Dunst and I, had done one for Spirit Team. So I've been basically doing a weekly radio program on and off for the better part of 15 years. And so we were doing that. And once we got Paranexus going, we created a board. We did a 501c3. Nonprofit, and we had board members and people I made friends with even to this day. They're still around. One of them was Ingrid Irwin in Australia. What a sweetheart. And she's such a nice person, and she became a board member. She's a paranormal investigator. In fact, in my opinion, she's the world's foremost leading authority on EVPs, even though she doesn't practice it anymore, doesn't really do much research anymore since her husband passed a few years ago. But she wrote the course, the EVP course that we have, and it's amazing. So she was talking to me about metaphysics doctoral degrees, and I honestly didn't even know such a thing existed. And she had gotten hers from another place, and so I looked into them, and I got really thinking about it and studying what these were and how they were issued and that kind of thing. And I realized, it kind of hit me, that everything I've been doing is metaphysics, because metaphysics is the study of consciousness and existence. And so pretty much everything falls under that. So if I'm teaching leadership, life skills, communication skills, that's all part of it. And what I wanted to do then, because I always threatened to start my own church, you know, Tracy and I would drive past the churches on Sunday, they'd be filled up, and I just couldn't understand it because, you know, wow, they're going there, and what are they getting in return? So I wanted to start a church that gave some people something in return, that taught them the important life skills that none of us really learned growing up, you know, self-esteem and, like the life leadership paragon, respect for free will, self-responsibility, self-completeness. And always, you know, we jokingly would threaten, I'm going to start a church, you know. Well, it hit me in 2010. In about April, I credit basically April 1st as the starting point of ICMH. And it hit me that everything I've been doing and teaching all these years is all metaphysical in nature. And it was like a light went on. You know, I get hit a ton of bricks of just the awareness, the recognition, the realization. Wow, this is what I've been doing. I need to take this now, and I need to structure a school that can teach these valuable life skills that have made our lives completely different, you know, have turned around. Positive life skills that people are not learning, and they're having all kinds of relationship problems and all this stuff going on because they just don't know these life skills, and they need to learn. And so I want to provide that. So I did my research, and I realized and found out that, you know, in order to confer degrees, you need to have they need to be religiously based or secularly based, which is what all the universities and colleges are, secularly based. So these are non-secular, religiously based degrees. So I started ICMH Church under a different name at the time, MCHS. And I started writing courses. I started getting it all, putting it all together in April 2010. And it took me about a month to figure it all out, what I was going to do, to identify the courses I wanted to write, the subjects I wanted to cover, how everything would work, you know, all that stuff. And so then I began writing courses, and frankly, I spent 80 hours a week writing courses, and that went on for about a year and a half. And so by September of 2010, I had enough courses, I was ahead enough that I could open up the school to enrollments, knowing that I would be ahead of anybody, you know, who who would be starting, right? So, and you got to keep in mind, at that time, there was only the doctoral degree. There was not a bachelor's or master's program. It was just a doctoral program. And the way that it worked is everybody took all the courses. So you start out, you know, you'd be taking all of them. And the assignments that were graded for spelling, typos, you know, punctuation, all that stuff. So in September 2010, started taking enrollments, and people started enrolling slowly. And I began, you know, kept writing courses. And so that's how it all evolved to that point. And then in 2011, I get an email from this person who she actually signed up for the free ordination we were offering at the time. And she said in her email that she's going to go to Sedona, but she wanted to talk to me because she needs to talk to me about something, and it would be a week before she'd get back, but then she would call me. Anyway, that was the start of my relationship with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Yes, 9 years ago now. Gee. But I really am curious. Did you feel in those first, about the 5 or so years prior to having that light bulb, as you say, go on, was there something that was yearning in you? Was there an ache, or did you feel like something was missing, that you were, like a life is like a puzzle and you're looking for the pieces to put together?
I don't know that resonates with me. I had been in that place prior to that, not in the 5 years prior, but, you know, I went through my existential crisis back in 2000, 2001, 2002, because I had been, you know, Jehovah's Witness all my life. I mean, I was 40 years old when I left, and I knew that the sky was green, and I could prove it to you. And then one day I woke up, and I'll be darned if the sky is not blue. And everything I understood about the world, my worldview, was gone. It's like the worldview was pulled out from underneath my feet. So I had to rethink it all. And so I went through an existential crisis at that point. You know, I went from Christian to deist and then to agnostic, which is basically where I'm at, combination of agnostic and atheist. I'm just not one of those fundamentalist atheists, nor am I a fundamentalist the other side, right? You're all, it's two sides of the same coin. But I don't know if there's a creator. I mean, a lot of things would suggest that, but I don't know. And it's certainly not the one.
So I, that's where I...
Well, I think...
Yeah, it looks like we're having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, we lost some sound there. Well, I find that, I think, and while Michael does that... Yeah, there you are. I was just going to say, while we're getting this technical thing squared away, I find the journey and people's journeys fascinating, honestly, because I'm always curious. Was there, yes, you had an existential crisis, but then you're looking for something that that drive, that something that, like, you should be doing something else, or that, you know, and obviously going on to, you know, give talks and lectures and so on. But I'm always curious about what is that drive, you know, that something. It's kind of like a lot of people I've heard say, like, I feel like I should be doing something. I feel like I should be, there's somewhere I'm supposed to be, or there's something I'm supposed to do. But they're not sure what it is. And it's like over years, these little pieces of a puzzle start to come together, and then that light bulb
moment. I guess that's true. Because back then, I told Tracy, I says, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm. I mean, it all hit me. It all came together. This is why I've been through everything I've been through. This is why I went through two alcoholic relationships with my mother and my ex-wife, my late ex-wife. This is why I was a witness and left. This is why all the adversity, everything, and this is why I went through, you know, traveling for 5 years and developing my stuff. because this is what I'm supposed to do. It was clear as day. It was like, you know, you wake up and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And Wendy in the chat, you know, was a calling. It was, because my mission has always been to help people get past the things that hold them back. That's been my mission for all of my adult life. I've always known that. My job is to help people get past the things that hold them back. That's my mission. And so my purpose in accomplishing that mission has changed over the years. At one point, I was traveling doing management leadership seminars. That was part of that deal. Before that, I was an elder in the church, right? And Jehovah's Witness. I was helping people get past the things that hold them back. Now, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm helping people get past the things that hold them back. So, yes, it all came together, and I realized this is what I needed to do.
Well, again, I find it interesting that you obviously had kind of like having the rug pulled out from under you one day and some cosmic hand saying, excuse me, you may have been born there, but you're supposed to be over here, you know, and you say, oh, yeah, okay, you know, and then, okay, well, where am I supposed to be? And I think everyone interprets it differently. You know, everyone, it's not everybody is going to build a metaphysical university. Sometimes the calling can be, I don't know, working at Home Depot, smiling at people. Do you know?
It's different things for different people.
For everyone. But if that guy at Home Depot is just smiling at people and thinking, you know, there's something else I'm supposed to be doing, you know, how would then, like, what do you look for? What would be the markers? Like, do you feel, do you have that psychic sense, if you will? Oh, I think I'm supposed to move here. Oh, I think I'm supposed to take that job. Or I think I'm supposed to go and hang out with some ghost hunters. Do you know, like, are you conscious of it? Or do you just, you know, kind of go with the flow and say, oh, I think that's curious and interesting. Maybe I'll do it. You know, like, what are those moments?
Yeah. I think that's the start. You're curious about it, and you look into it, and things evolve. And then one day you wake up and say, oh, yeah, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. So you figure it out. You eventually – I mean, I was 51 years old when I started this church. You know, I mean, I had a lot of history behind me, a lot of life experience behind me at that point. And I've got even more now. You know, I mean, this has all been a journey. So – when people are looking for their purpose, you got to ask, you know, what flips your switch? You know, the question I always, what do you call a good day? You know, if you can answer that, which is a simple question, hard to answer, but what do you call a good day? And then you can be on your way to figuring out what it is you want to do. But anyway, so we continue on. So then, as far as the evolution goes back in that year, when I started the church, I wrote the 9 principles of belief. You know, and they are largely unchanged since the day I wrote them. I mean, they've been somewhat tweaked slightly here, one or two here and there, but that's it. They've been pretty much the same thing right from the get-go. And see, that's what I wanted to do when I started the church, because there was two things. There was a church, and then there's a school. And people who knew me about fell off their chair when I told them, I'm starting a church. What are you talking about? You're starting a church? Are you crazy, man? You know, but the reason I did that is because of the legalities too. You know, I want to help people, but I've got to operate within the law too, right? So, you know, and I felt that a lot of the people that needed the help to jump into some kind of the name of an organization that did not include something familiar to them, such as church, was too much of a leap. But the people who had already made that leap, well, you know, maybe they don't like it, and I don't like it either, but it's the way it is. And so, you know, it's done. Everything in this church, in this school, everything is done for a reason. Everything. I have left nothing to chance. I mean, I went over things a billion times. Okay, that might be an exaggeration. But I went over things, and everything that we have done for a specific reason. It hasn't been left to chance. So the policies that we have, the systems that we have, the principles of belief that we have, they're all there deliberately. And that was important to me because I wanted to start an organization that would free people, free them from, you know, the falsities that are out there, from the mysticism that's not based in reality at all, you know. And if they're happy with what they're doing, that's fine. You know, just do no harm, do right. That's all I say. You know, you wanna worship God, well, that's fine. Just do no harm. But bear in mind that no sentient, higher evolved creature would ever stand for other sentient creatures to worship them. None. And, you know, none of us would do that. We would never allow somebody to worship us. And if we did, that means we probably, you know, a bit nuts. But any rational person with head on their shoulders would never allow that. So I wanted this organization to be to offer freedom. And frankly, I think it's the healthiest spiritual philosophy on the planet. Why? Do no harm, do right. Treat people with respect. Accept people for who they are, not for what they believe or what they say. But and if you can't, then fine. You're not in a relationship with them if they're not good people. I appreciate that. But don't, you know, be tolerant. Don't be prejudiced. Accept people, you know, whether they're gay or straight. I don't like those terms, you know, straight, because it implies that gay is crooked, right? It's not. And so, you know, whatever you are, just be. And that's what I wanted people to understand, accept that. And that's coming. I've come a long way from that. Because, you know, as a Christian, I was basically homophobic. Because that's what the Christian view is, you know, from the Bible. And so I wanted to offer that. Anyway, I'm rambling. So let's move forward. You have another question, or do you want me to continue?
No, I'm just interested in, because I think every individual, and not only what they do, is the building blocks of who they are, you know, and that yep. evolution. And to me, I've always been more curious, not just about what somebody has done, but who they have evolved from where to where in who they are, if that makes sense. And. Yep. So how would you say, before we move on, just how would you say you evolved from the time you left the Jehovah's Witnesses to where you were, just on a personal level, where you were when you started the church?
Oh, man, I'd grown a lot. I mean, obviously I was no longer homophobic. You know, I didn't buy into the fables, stuff from the Bible and from all that stuff that somebody did started out as an idea in somebody's head. I learned to think for myself. That's the bottom line. I learned to think for myself, and that's called critical thinking.
Yeah.
And so I would look at things and discern and decide, is this credible? Is this real? Is this worth believing in? You know, is this worth anything? And so I grew a lot. You know, in that 10 years between, you know, about 99 to 2010, 11 years, and I loosened up, you know, I lightened up. I wasn't as judgmental as I had been, and it was a good period of growth, and I needed that. I needed that.
See, and I think that's important for people to connect with in a way of, like, we are all evolving. I got a couple of friends who like to tease me about a few things we did back when I was 20, and I cringe because, anymore, you know.
Right.
But again, that evolution of who you are, and you say that, to me, it's kind of like becoming, and I know maybe it's not a parallel, but to me it is, somebody who's a far right-wing conservative suddenly has the light bulb go on and is a left-wing progressive. You know,
it was exactly what happened. I went from conservative mindset to more of a liberal mindset. Mm. But, you know, but again, I opened my mind, but just not so open that my brains fall out. And that's what I tell people, you know, be open minded, look at it, assess it, use critical thinking skills, ask questions, and determine whether it's something that you want to buy into or not.
See, I think that just nails it. You know, because if you are self-thinking and, you know, deductive reasoning, then that helps toward the evolution, which is exactly what you write about in the program.
So anyway, so we continued on, and, you know, and again in 2011, you came along, Dr. Hunter came along and went through the program. She was like a, you know, an oldest child. You know, she went through it quicker, and I'm looking at this, wait. See, this is another place I learned. See, I've learned all along the way. I have grown even more. I've learned, and I don't know how to put it. My awareness has been expanded. So she's cooking along in it, and I'm saying, wait a minute, you know, you're supposed to do this, and I'm thinking, why, Doug? Why is she supposed to do this in this way? Just because that was your vision and you think that's the way it should be, what does that mean? What does that matter? And that's where I came up with, look, if there's not a good reason why not, then it's okay. And so I grew as a result of you going through the program. And that's another part of this whole thing, that since you came and joined and took an active part in this, the whole school and everything has been a product of not just me. It's had your influence. You know, Tracy's always been there behind the scenes. She's a huge part of this, always behind the scenes. You know, it's just her thing. But none of this would be what it is without Tracy's involvement in developing it in those early years. And it would not be where it is without your, Vicky, your involvement and your contributions to the whole thing. So it's been a team effort, and it's worked well. So we're cooking along, and you know, there's other things that we've done in the church, in terms of, we did the One Planet Accord, you know, which is one, we designed that, it's on the website, just look for it, it's part of our education programs. And we've done this radio program. We started out all those years ago, you know, and I do a talk, Vicky would do a talk, we had guest speakers here and there, we've interviewed people here and there, but we've been doing this the whole time up until, you know, a few months ago when I just decided that it's time for me to kind of step out of the way a little bit and let Dr. Michael and Vicky do this thing and expand and grow and evolve.
Well, and to be fair, I just want to inject this, that in the just a few years prior to me connecting with you and the church and the school, I had threatened to other people, I think I'll just go and build a church. And you'd what? Because people know me that I'm anti-church. But I said, look, if anybody's going to start, and especially government regulations and so on, and up here we weren't, I certainly wasn't educated about secular versus non-secular, you know, and the churches were all fundamental churches. Well, I didn't know of an atheist church at that time. And so there was Universal Life Church. It's a few things I had investigated, but, you know, but I thought often, I'll just go build my own church and do my own thing. And, of course, when coming across your church, Dr. Kelly, I went, well, but this is the kind of church that I would build, so why do I have to?
Yeah, you already did, of course. So, and then you became part of it and made it part of, you know, your influence is here, you know.
Well, and to be fair, and to you know, for those listening, it was by osmosis. It wasn't a, oh, I want to be a part of your organization. You know, oh, yeah, okay, come on. It was kind of a connection and just a friendship that started to build. And I would just say, you know, if there's anything I can do. And then you'd ask me for ideas. I'd tell you some that, and I'd ask you for ideas. And it was through your encouragement that, of course, I would write courses. Now, my background is in writing in my own dyslexic way. And in the Dr. Kelly School of Grammar, and I had other words for it. I might admit to that now. But learning how to build courses, because it's a very unique delivery. It's not like just, you know, writing a news article, or, you know, it's educational. It's very deliberate, as you have used that word, and the way to present it. And a lot of times I know what's in my head. I just wouldn't necessarily know how to do those building blocks. So with your very patient care, you know, and over time, building the numbers of courses that I did, that didn't happen overnight either. It was through quite a process. So for those listening to understand that it wasn't like, oh, geez, I need a job, because that's not how it happened. It was you were at the very early stages of still building the school. I really loved what it represented, how it spoke to me. It resonated at so many levels. But the tarot courses, for instance, and actually writing a course, I've always believed it's more apprenticeship. So then how would I, you know, with your encouragement, how would I be able to present such a course? And that was kind of grueling for me, but it was a challenge. So we both been learning. You know, there was a lot of learning and growing. And, you know, that brings us to this time in our lives and the evolution. So it's been an interesting journey, and of course a considerable importance to me. And now Michael, of course, joining the ranks, Michael coming in off and on over the years, who's you know, you, Michael, you have been, and if I can say it, well, I'm going to say it anyway, you have been truly a pleasure and such an interesting energy to bring in, something a little more youthful, and I know you might say millennial.
Well, but you
you have a whole different way of thinking. You're good on your feet. You're interested in life and people. That's key. You know, when you're always curious. And I have really enjoyed, you know, that extra energy that's been injected. So,
well, thank you.
I know Dr. Kelly, you'd have more to say about that than I do.
Yeah, well,
I just have to say, in part of the journey, Michael's been pretty integral the last few years.
Oh, yeah. Well, that brings us to 2015 when we started TFU. Now, we'd had New Age class prior to that, and then we switched to ICHS, which is stood for something. Hey, it's been 5 years and I'm over 60. Anyway, so then finally we wanted to really get a second school going, you know, basically the same curriculum but divided differently and aimed at different students who were, you know, felt maybe identified with a different name and different makeups, you know, shorter courses, things like that. So Thomas Francis University was created, and also in that year we opened up the physical location, the first and only physical location, you know, the Metaphysics Center here in Northport, Florida, and had that for several months. And that's when we were doing the video broadcast, and Michael was an integral part of that because he was producing them. He was back there, you know, manning the cameras and the audio and taking care of all that. And then once we found that that was just not going to maintain itself, it was just not enough interest, so we closed that. But then we, you know, switched to the radio, kept doing the radio program, and Michael began to do more and more as part of that. And of course now he's there with Dr. Hunter doing it every week. So there's been a lot of growth and changes, and TFU continues to be a part of it. Go ahead, Michael, if you have anything you want to say.
Well, just every healthy organization is going to grow and evolve, and you know, we've really come a long way, and you've brought a lot of people into a new way of thinking, and we can see that in the live chat, and you know, which is why we always encourage those listening to the archives. We appreciate it, and we understand that you can't always join us in the live chat, but there's some really great stories out there, and there's some great additions, and it's been very interesting because, from my perspective, it's pretty unique in that these lessons that you're teaching are a lot of the lessons that, you know, you tried and, with some varying degrees of success, actually managed to instill in me. So
imagine that. See, that's the thing. Michael's been in, I mean, he was raised on this stuff, you know. And, you know, of course, I was evolving at the same time, and we've had numerous, too many to count, talks. And he knows this stuff, you know, because he was taught it growing up and over his, you know, young adult years here. And, you know, and that's good. Go ahead and finish your thoughts on.
Well, it's just been interesting to see both how you've grown and developed. I've, you know, of course, developed as well in terms of my philosophical beliefs. Look, an outlook on metaphysics, metaphysical humanism as a concept was, I think, an interesting, you know, approach. And did we discuss yet why you chose metaphysical humanism as the title?
Yeah, no, we haven't discussed it, but I'll tell you. You know, there's such a thing as called secular humanism, right? And exactly. I always identified with secular humanism. However, with secular humanism, now you're running into the realm of more of the fundamentalist atheists, because secular humanists absolutely do not believe in anything paranormal, anything, any life after death, anything like that. They're, I mean, as a rule, okay? And I'm sorry, but I don't know enough to rule all that stuff out. And I personally experienced some things that are not so easy to explain, even with my degree of critical thinking and evidence analysis. And so there's got to be something going on here. And so secular humanism is just, it's close, but it's not there yet. That's why I came up with metaphysical humanism. And when that came, that was an evolution too. That didn't start out that way. It was back in 05 or so. And metaphysical humanists is what we are. And the work that we do is paying it forward. We help people. We do no harm, do right.
So where do you see, if I can ask, where do you see things now and your vision of how it continues and progresses?
Could you repeat that for me? I'm sorry.
But in the school and where you are now. So, you know, in this first 10 years and taking an evaluation and assessment, where do you see it now and what's your vision? Where do you see it? And like, I'm expecting Michael is a part of that. So maybe I should ask Michael with that.
Where's it going to go? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. What do you see for the future of the school?
Well, my vision has pretty much been steady. It just hasn't. It hasn't happened as fast as I thought it would or wanted it to. You know, I mean, we've got students, we had over 1,000 students enrolled in over 60 countries and graduates, you know, and, but the thing I guess I wasn't ready for was how distracted people can get. So that's something that I've had to, and we've done a lot of things trying to help students stay on track. Don't get distracted with life. Don't let life get you down. You know, you've got your goals. You've got your objectives. Don't lose sight of that. You know, this is what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Follow it through. Make it happen. You know, if you know me, that's my thing. Go out and make it happen. I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't. I want to hear why you can and make it happen.
And I'll just add to that, you know, I can say from personal experience, and I can empathize with those who have things come up who, you know, life gets in the way or they, you know, have a hard time sticking with it or focusing on things. And I will say this, when that's happened, don't let that make you feel bad about it and, you know, send you into a guilt spiral that you don't need. Instead, just refocus. It's not a big deal. Things happen. Maybe you needed that time to gain greater understanding. And either way, let's hope that you learned a lesson from the experience, that something productive came from it, and continue on with life. Refocus yourself, but don't let the, you know, perceived guilt of, I fell behind, now I don't want to get started again because it's been too long. Don't let that hold you back. That's just what you needed to do to get to where you needed to be.
Yeah. And some students might feel embarrassed too. You know, I've been gone so long. Well, don't feel embarrassed. Come back. I mean, I love to see, and this happens all the time. My students have been gone a couple years. They come back. They start resuming their studies. That's great. And I tell them, it's great to see you back. I want you to come back. I want you to fulfill this. I want you to reach your goals and objectives.
Well, and I guess over 10 years now, you've seen that. I mean, bless his heart, one of my favorites, Zach Frame, you know, 8 years it took him to get his doctoral, and he had, boy, a lot of things in his life, the least of which was dealing with MS and stem cell transplants and all kinds of stuff. But he just stuck to it. So, I mean, for the grace of time, you know, it's a relationship that's built with people, and to constantly be there as that cornerstone or that encouragement, if you will, and that's part of what the school represents.
And many students have been through a lot of stuff. Zach was one of them. Mm. Many students have been through a lot of stuff. They lose loved ones. They've dealt with illness and sickness, and it goes on and on. I mean, even Wendy, who's in our chat room right now, I read her story the other day at the graduation. She allowed me to share that, and I didn't mention that at the time, but she's been through a lot, and she's back. She's still there, you know, and has a great attitude. And that's what I appreciate, and that's what stimulates me. And that's one thing I wanted to tell students, you know, I wanted to tell them what has been my greatest realization, perhaps, or my greatest lesson or something, you know, one of the greatest lessons I've had through this whole thing, or the things that I've discovered, is just how many good, decent people there are out there who really want to make a positive difference in the world. Because before this, I wasn't exposed to all that many, you know, just the stuff you hear on the news and people you see locally, you know, but now I've seen that there's so many of you who want to make a difference. And yes, you can get discouraged. I mean, we all get discouraged at times. And so, but don't let that discouragement hold you back. Don't let it get to you. And I'm saying this as much for myself as anybody, folks. I really mean that, because I can get discouraged too. And but, you know, I come back around. When I want to do something, I make it happen and I do it. And I'm proud of that. And I've made a lot of stuff happen. I've done a lot of stuff and I'm proud of that. When I was 18 years old, one of the people that really inspired me was Leonardo da Vinci. Why? Because he did a whole bunch of things and he was really good at them. You know, not just one. So I looked at that and I thought, that's what I want to do. And so that's what I've done all my life. I mean, I've tried so many and done so many things, so many different things, you know, from the school to speaking to, you know, to scuba diving to producing music to, I mean, there's been to fixing stuff, you know, to rebuilding stuff to, I mean, there's so many things that I've done because I want to experience life and I enjoy doing that stuff. So the same goes for all of you who are either graduates or still in the program. You know, don't get discouraged. Don't let life get to you. Don't let the world stuff get you down. And that's, you know, just hang in there and keep moving forward and just focus on setting a good example for those within your sphere of influence. Well, you know, have that high sense of integrity, not for anybody else, but for you.
You know, I want to just quickly go through a few of the comments made in the chat, if I may. Cecilia said, "This philosophy helped me find a self I had locked up in a bird cage." That's profound. Mm-hmm. That's huge. Dr. Edwards says, "I believe one of the best lessons I got from the doctoral program was not to take myself too seriously. And it helped him to cope with a health crisis he went in the last few years, and he's very grateful." Wendy said she's so glad for you sharing your story, and she said her life wouldn't be the same without your courses. Dr. Darlene says the principle she learned has withstood the test of time, and you've had a profound influence, a profound effect on her life personally and professionally. And, you know, Dr. Shirley, who's been around from, I think, a long time, you've been around, Dr. Shirley, since, I'm thinking, 9 years, maybe. I have really enjoyed listening to your story tonight, Dr. Kelly. You're right, we don't get life skills taught to us. You have a special way of presenting and articulating, so precise and right, with a confident, natural voice. You've made a huge difference in my life. So she says she wishes you all the best in the next 10 years and beyond.
And I appreciate that from all of you. I really do. That's, you know, and I get comments, you know, now and then over the years. To that effect, it's changed a lot of lives, and that's one of the reasons why we switched from the typical dissertations that we had back in the day to the doctoral degree assignment that's got about 10 or 11 questions about, and that's what I want to know as an instructor, as an educator. I want to know, What did you get from this? What did you learn? How did you grow? How did you evolve? How will it help you in life? How will it make the world a better place? How will you deliver your greatness to the world?
Well, it pokes people, doesn't it? It pokes people to think about that in ways, and ways that they hadn't thought about it before. Well, I'd say provoke. You might say provoke. I say it pokes them. It's like, oh, that was a poker. I never thought of that before. Ooh, me, you know.
So, binoculars are a funny thing.
Well, you know, I've enjoyed tonight very much, and you know, for the last 10 years, 9 years, I've been really grateful, and you know, I mean, for the grace of time and all of the universe willing, I'll be around for the next 10 years, and we'll see how it goes. We're all getting a little older now, you know. You never know.
Well, you know, speak for yourselves. Millennials never get older. Right. That's the rule, huh? We have this whole agreement
going
on.
Then it'll be your turn, Michael.
But now this is...
Well, thanks, Dr. Kelly and Michael. This is great.
This has been a fascinating discussion. It's been, you know, a pleasure just to sit back and listen to this, because it's a trip down memory lane a little bit for myself, too. So this has been, you know, a fascinating discussion, and I always appreciate this. And we've talked about, you know, any contributions I've made to the program, but it's easy for me because I get to bounce ideas off of creative, intelligent people. So it makes anything I do in my job that much easier. And I get to join with this community of curious, like-minded individuals every week, which has really become a highlight for me. So thank you for joining us, and I hope that you continue to do so. We're going to have, I think, a fascinating topic next week once we figure it out, but it's going to be great. It is. And I guess before we start wrapping up, anybody have any final thoughts?
No, I just want to say thanks again. And thanks for Dr. Kelly to... you know, to Dr. Kelly for being here tonight and sharing his story. It's awesome.
And I just wanted to do this. It was the time. It was 10 years. And I wanted to do as much for posterity as anything, you know, for a record and, you know, for the day when I'm not around to ask. So hopefully it'll add to that. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you. And I want to say this from my bottom of my heart. Thank you for being part of this. Thank you for trusting in me, in us. For your education, for doing this. Thank you for being who you are, and thank you for delivering your greatness to the world in the way that you do it in a unique way. Thank you, and keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Well.
And that's to you, Michael.
Well, I was going to say, until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.